out for the castle, I couldn't help but wonder at the massive power of a mob. In the dark forest, where there had been 40,000, the scale hadn't been so evident. The forest concealed the majority of the players. But here, in this empty field? The most interesting thing was that the Scroll of Armageddon that Evelyn had offered me could wipe out almost everyone. The radius of this spell was 300 meters from its epicenter, and it would destroy not only all life, but all the equipment as well, with the exception of the players' bags. Any item with a durability stat would evaporate in a flash, leaving the players in their diapers. It was this particular side effect of the spell that made everyone wary of using it. The last word, as the players liked to call Armageddon, destroyed foe and ally alike, along with everything they had. Magdy didn't overcomplicate our tactical plan. All the players were divided into three groups, a center with two wings. He placed the highest-level players in the left wing, including his own people, and the 300 warriors from Phoenix, angry, unhappy, and yet taciturn and focused. They understood perfectly well that they had a job to do. The right wing consisted entirely of Evelyn's troops, with him in command. Magdy left them alone. The center was our weakest point. It contained everyone below level 150, players who wanted to find out what a pitched battle was like. This crowd wasn't likely to accomplish anything anyway, but at least it would distract some part of the enemy's forces, which isn't anything to sneer at. If they do contrive to send someone to the Greylands, they'll have recouped their cost in full. Prior to assembling the players, I announced that during the battle, I would give the word, at which everyone had to drop everything and either die in the next 10 seconds, and thereby save their items, or flee as fast as their legs could carry them. That announcement alone had cost me almost 2,000 players, but, surprisingly, also gained me another 3. People are strange, after all. Few believed we would be victorious, but there were plenty of those who wanted to see Armageddon used in a PvP battle for essentially the first time ever, even if they risked losing their equipment in doing so. We were forced to advertise our Armageddon plan quite loudly. I had to publicize the scroll's properties, since many refused to believe me. It was too bad that the scroll had one limitation. It couldn't be used outside of a battle, and even then, it was inaccessible during the first minute of battle. In fact, it was too bad, because I had thought of teleporting straight in the center of the enemy army and casting the scroll. Poof! And that'd be it. I could peacefully take my castle without worrying about enemies. But no, the scroll had these stupid restrictions, so now we had to figure out how we would survive that first minute. Several hours before deployment, the trio of us, Magdy, Evelyn, and me, got together and came up with a very cunning plan that would allow us not only to hold out for a minute, but also nullify all the disadvantages of having to respawn. And it would be our new friends from Phoenix that would help us in this. "Speaking," I answered the vibrating amulet, with only about 800 meters remaining to the castle. Wall upon wall, that is a weak description of what was going on before us. Our opponents had managed to swell their ranks with about 20,000 men. At least, that's what the status display was showing me. Not only are they stronger, but there's more of them.
"Man, this is Gira. As I told you, we don't take part in battles between players, so I would like to terminate our agreement."
"Just wait a little, Gira," I restrained the over-eager girl. "The attack is just a diversion,
Our real goal is to sneak me and your warriors into the castle. That's priority number one.
Wait just a little, please.
Okay. I can give you 2 hours. If we don't make it to the castle, I'll leave. Keep in mind that I won't fight against free citizens.
I understand. I have 2 hours. We'll reach the castle. I shut off the amulet and, glancing at Magdy, grinned and said, Go, go, go!
All raid party members, kill everyone who's not with us!
Then all hell broke loose.
Wings, advance! Center, hold your positions! Archers and spellcasters, fire at will! Healers, cast domes! Let's go, boys!
Are we going to place bets, man?
My raid leader smirked, stopping beside me. As a persona requiring protection, I was placed in the left wing under the steady watch of our clan's raid party. According to our plan, Evelyn's kamikaze was under similar protection. He was protected by 13 paladins who'd be casting a perpetual bubble on him. This player could not be allowed to die. Otherwise, our entire campaign would come to nothing.
The center just lost 300 people. The right wing has gotten too close to the castle. The guards have entered the fight. The left wing is stuck, but isn't suffering any major losses,
said one of my players, whom Magdy had designated as the scout.
45 enemy players have been destroyed. 49. Our losses are...
Mayhian, Evelyn called, sounding happy. Sorry that I baited the gods on purpose, but now we're at hatred with Narlak, and got the pirate quest, too. The gods can't stray more than 500 meters from the castle, so we'll just retreat and get back to the fight. Signing off.
The center just lost another 300. The left wing's down 200. The right wing has pushed back the enemy and killed 20 guards.
Do it, Magdy, I commanded, and we began to set our plan into action.
Attention, all raid party members. Fog incoming.
The raid leader's message appeared before me, and our army was blanketed by thick clouds of fog cast by our mages. When I had met with the Phoenix mercenaries, I had to warn them that at my command they had to either take off their equipment or lose it, even though they had shown up with the most basic gear possible. If I hadn't done so, Ekeler could have had grounds to claim that I had destroyed 1 million items belonging to his players, and I wasn't about to risk that kind of liability. Each wing had a special squad that was responsible for casting fog in order to conceal our forces from the enemy, as well as cover us while we erected damage-mitigating shields before the fog dissipated. Furthermore, the players closest to the Phoenix mercenaries, and it so happened that these were my own raiders, had to remove all their armor and sit down on the ground as if awaiting some mass annihilation before the fog had faded. Psychology. What can you do? It stood to reason that the Phoenix mercs would now warn their people that there'd be some big boom in a few seconds, at which point the enemy would remove their defensive shields, since keeping those up required the healers to wield their staves, and those could vanish at any moment. Besides, if we get lucky, the enemy players wouldn't only hide their weapons, but also take off their armor in the hopes of saving several thousand gold. And at that point, Evelyn's boys would be free to do their dance. Armageddon is a very scary spell, and there's basically no defense against it. An instant wave spreading at the speed of sound and annihilating everything in its way, including equipment. Only a bubble or the denial spell, which itself costs a pretty penny, can defend against it. And yet, the last word had so many minuses to it that it was almost never used in practice. In battle, players preferred to use miniature substitutes of the last word, such as the meteor shower spell. The idea here was simple. A dozen mages would form a circle while everyone around them channeled their mana to them. Upon casting Meteor Shower, a doorway to hell would open up over the enemy, and enormous chunks of lava would begin to plummet from the sky, causing immense damage in a concentrated area. Each second of the spell exhausts a level 200 mage's mana pool, so there aren't many who can afford to keep this spell going for a sustained period of time. Furthermore, even a slight shove of a single mage is enough to interrupt the spell, making it a very unprofitable and mana-hungry battle maneuver. Yet, we were fighting a non-standard battle with a practically limitless number of players who could channel mana. So,
"The enemy has removed its gear. Their domes are down,"
our scout reported calmly. "Your turn, Evelyn." I instantly ordered into the amulet with a mean smirk. There are times, I guess, when it doesn't hurt to have the enemy among your ranks.
"Meteor shower has been cast," the scout went on. "Enemy losses amount to 100, 108, domes are back up, 340, 1500, 2200, There are no more survivors in the spell area. We can stop casting."
"Shut it down, Evelyn." I instantly shut off the mana flow, turned to Magdi, and launched the second part of our plan.
"Go! Center, mount and charge. Wings, defensive domes, and retreat."
It's hard to survive meteor shower, but not impossible. To do so, the players need to be covered by defensive domes and wear good armor. Also, their hit points need to be raised to a 100%. In that case, every one of them should survive. But when you're naked, without a single dome, and suddenly flaming boulders begin to fall on your head, even if the area of effect isn't very large, a mere 100 meters, and the spell can't be retargeted, the chances of the dense crowd getting out alive were zero. The first phase of our plan worked perfectly, though Eckler's brothers wouldn't be fooled by the fog maneuver again. All the worse for them. The second phase of our plan was as simple as a brick. The center casts all its defenses to the wind, mounts its pets, and sallies forth. Even if they don't do anything to the enemy in the damage department, they'll accomplish their main task, knock the players to the ground, ride over them, and split the enemy forces in two halves. This kind of maneuver wouldn't make much of an impression on battle-hardened raiders, yet ordinary warriors and mercenaries, seeing an avalanche of players on steeds hurtling towards you, bulging their eyes and screaming some battle cry, why, you might just forget that you're only playing a game and succumb to panic. And a panicking enemy is our friend, brother, and ally, whom I'm always happy to see. Our kamikazes would be wiped out very quickly, I was sure of that. But at the very least, they'll make one pass through the azures and split our foes in two parts, which is what I need.
"Wings, combine! Attack their left flank!"
It's a simple fact that we can't destroy all of them. We don't get XP for killing players. That's another simple fact. What do we have to do to squeeze out some advantage? Yep. Destroy the guards. The 30% XP penalty for respawning can be recouped by rolling over the NPCs, ignoring the players for a short while. I still have the last word in store for those, but the guards and the phantoms are a very useful factor in this ordeal. Why not use them to their utmost?
"The center is 30%. No, 33% destroyed.
Despite the rapidly unfolding events, our scout went on with his report.
The enemy has been split in two parts. Our center is 67% destroyed. During the charge, we have destroyed... Phoenix Group, attack! Your objective is to break through the enemy. Come on, boys, show us what you're famous for. Don't let them close ranks even for a minute.
Sorry, boys, but you'll have to die a little for the well-being of my clan. 300 warriors, perhaps not the best in Malabar, but the best in my army, had to hold the gap my center had made. It worked out perfectly. The players were all on one side, and almost all the guards were on the other. No, okay, there were players there too, but there were definitely more guards, so that's where we'd go. I wasn't sorry to lose the Phoenix Group. It had played its part.
"The center is gone, and our wings have joined," the scout reported again. "At the current moment, we have 7,700 men, and the enemy has 10,200, not counting the guards. All raid party members, fog incoming!"
Once more the fog, and once more the domes of protection. There was no chance of repeating the feat with the meteor shower, but there wasn't any need either. The point of the fog now was to conceal us from enemy attack and force them to attack our general area. I wasn't afraid of a retaliatory shower from the Azures. We were sufficiently defended. And the enemy knew this. And we knew that the enemy knew this. And the enemy knew that we knew that the enemy... But okay, I'm getting distracted.
"Chain lightning, 200 down. The Phoenix Group has only 200 remaining. 170. 80 guards have been destroyed. Black Plague. 300 down."
The scout's report was dry and ominous. We were growing fewer and fewer, while our enemy kept using stronger and stronger spells. On the other hand, there was an upside, too. We were gaining experience for killing the guards. In fact, it had started flowing in so quickly that in just 10 seconds, a welcome message appeared before me. I had reached level 102.
"We're stuck,"
Magdy wrote in the clan chat. He and his men had taken up positions in the front lines.
"We're not going to get farther." "The Phoenix Group has been eliminated," the scout reported.
I checked the time and smiled. They had held out a whole minute longer than I had reckoned they would. We had been granted 2 minutes of battle with the guards, but now the main mass of players would collapse on us. This looked like it was it. It had been a good fight, but I must admit that the Phoenix boys had earned their fame. I would have to thank Eckler for them.
"Bubble on the kamikaze!"
That's an odd message. I don't remember discussing this. Why is Magdy suddenly improvising? It's not like him, and... Something vast and black engulfed us. It was as if someone had deleted the sun and forgotten to hang up Barleona's 2 moons, or the stars. The darkness was so impenetrable that it was even a little scary. What if Cthulhu suddenly showed up? But Cthulhu didn't show. A hurricane did. The enemy mages summoned an unimaginable hurricane right in the middle of our host, and it scattered us like a bunch of kittens. For the first time in my life, I understood how laundry feels in a washing machine. I was being spun from side to side, slamming into other players, dragged along the earth, and losing 5% of my hit points every second. I can't explain how I survived it. My pitiful attempts to summon the healing spirits seemed in vain. Several times, someone cast a bubble on me, and a ward that decreased damage taken by 50%, as well as some other buffs. Evidently, despite the insane whirlpool, the raiders went on heeding their prior orders to ensure that I survive. I'd have to make sure to reward my entire clan with a prize. Remember this, imitator, a 50% bonus to each player's monthly salary.
723 players in the ranks,
my scout reported calmly from somewhere under me. The twister did not scatter us across a large area. To the opposite, it clumped us all in one pile. What a pleasure it was to be buried under dozens of writhing bodies, all of them cursing the guy who cooked up this battle. An immense pleasure indeed, considering that there were others less fortunate than I beneath me. Quite a demoralizing spell, this. I'd need to find out what it was called. It could come in handy.
Enemy losses amount to... Raid party, plan B, 10-second countdown, casting fog again.
What I like about this game is that, unlike in reality, you don't have to pull your head through a hefty breastplate or fasten your boots and belt, especially when you're buried under a mass of bodies and a cloud of fog. All you have to do is write up a little script before the battle that will remove anything you want from yourself and place it in your bag. Right before my eyes, the players I could see went suddenly naked. No one wanted to lose their equipment. I wonder, will the Azures buy this fog as well?
In connection with your death, your level of experience has been reduced by 30%. Current experience...
Here he is, the bastard, hissed some player as soon as I appeared at the respawn point. Judging by his reaction, he had not disrobed in time. Well, I'd consider that a minor success.
Have a rest, you jerk!
In connection with your death, your level of experience has been reduced by 30%.
My turn!
Yelled one of the level 270 mages. I managed to lift my head in time to suffer a headshot from an icicle. That hurt. It's a good thing I don't have any legendary items.
In connection with your death, your level of experience has been reduced by 30%.
He's back!
A happy voice sounded again.
Guys, come on. Is this really that entertaining?
I managed to say before three axes at once sent me back to black non-existence. I did manage to notice that there were very many players with the Phoenix and Azure Dragons crests gathered around the respawn point. I guess I won't be getting out of here anytime soon.
In connection with your death, your level of experience has been reduced by 30%.
He's respawned!
Another cry. Okay, they were really starting to get on my nerves now. Including my very first respawn, I've already spent 2 days dying and respawning. Unlike the ordinary players who can pop out and have a walk around reality for several days, past the time, the duration of my respawn was strictly controlled. Every 12 hours. Bunch of assholes.
In connection with your death, your level of experience has been reduced by 30%. At the behest of a herald, you have been granted 24 hours immunity to all attacks from other players.
There he is again!
Please forgive my interference,
finally said the voice that I had been waiting for from the very beginning. The herald's bell indicated that the battle had finally drawn to a close for me, at least for the next day.
Free Citizen Mayen has acquired temporary immunity to damage from players. I wish to remind you that under Barleona law, the premeditated and malicious restraint of a free citizen at a respawn point may be viewed as a violation of the given law.
"We ain't violating nothing, Harold,"
said a voice I'd heard before somewhere.
"We just wanted to up our PK count a bit.
Who knew that this citizen is so powerless? You alive, Mayan?
A message from Magdi immediately appeared in the clan chat.
Sorry, but they're not letting us through to the respawn point. They've got all the approaches to it covered. Wait for the Herald. He should be there soon.
He's already here.
Excellent. We'll cast a portal and pull you out of there. 20 seconds.
What about the raid? What about Altamita?
In that case, please keep my words in mind the next time you wish to increase your counter, the Herald said at this moment, and vanished in his portal.
Well, you happy, Mayan? Nothing for you, so nothing for anyone else, eh?
Said the same familiar voice. A huge, dense crowd surrounded me so tightly I could barely move. Were they trying to mess with me? How naive. Peering closer, I recognized the owner of the familiar voice. It was one of the raiders from the Dark Forest. I didn't even bother to check the name of this player, who was from the Heirs of the Titans clan. I couldn't care less.
It's ready. We're roping you in, wrote Magdi,
and the angry faces of the players vanished and were replaced by the familiar hubbub of the city. So what happened? I asked, as soon as I emerged from the portal. I was in a safe zone of Anhur's, with Barsa before me. So, leaving Magdi in peace, I immediately started grilling the girl.
42 of our players didn't remove their equipment in time and want help purchasing new gear. I agreed despite the contract. As for the rest, everyone's happy. The XP from the guards more than compensated the respawn penalty. We destroyed about 99% of the defenders. 100 or 2 were outside of the scroll's radius. Altamita is fine. There aren't any guards left. The garrison was close to the kamikaze. Your mercenary, Gera, I believe, contacted me and asked when you would return. I explained to her that I didn't know, so she said that she wouldn't terminate your agreement until she had a chance to speak with you. What else? All 3 clans have filed claims against us to the tune of around 40 million gold, and...
Barsa giggled as if she didn't want to go on, so I was forced to prod her a little. And?
All 3 clans have blacklisted us, and are obsessed with pursuing us until we respawn. Evelyn wanted to get you out, but Phoenix scattered any help he tried to muster because you deprived them of the opportunity the castle presented.
Deprived? I asked, surprised.
The next day after our battle, Phoenix and the Azures went back to level up with the Phantoms, who turned out to have grown to level 380. These mobs, it turns out, are governed by a very curious experience algorithm. They grant XP only to whoever does more than 50% damage to them. Since it's so difficult to accomplish this now, the grinding exercise has, well, ground to a halt. After all, as soon as a Phantom enters blessed ground, he'll basically destroy himself. The Phantom hunt can only happen inside Iluna's circle, yet the working conditions there are too difficult. Plus, there's the blessing's cool-off period. Anyway, everyone's pissed at you and holds you responsible for this loss. They're killing us anywhere they can find us, including at our mines. While you were off respawning, the clan lost all but 3 gatherers and 4 laborers. On the other hand, all the raiders have remained. Stacy and Plinto are still nowhere to be found, and I have no idea how to get in touch with them. Their amulets don't work, and they don't seem to be checking their mail. There are several pluses, however. In the weekly leaderboard for most influential player, you're now ranked 2nd after Ekeler. The challenge, the creative tactics that took into account the enemy spies,
the will to go through with it, knowing the end result. They even made a show about our battle. I watched it last night. You know what it's called? The Elephant and the Pug. Everyone's calling us the legendary elephants of Barleona now.
Elephants?
Cool, ain't it? Undig it, as the greatest victim of your Armageddon exploit, has unfurled a full-scale media campaign against our clan. They're hitting us on all fronts. They even dredged up the accusation that we charge players for quests. That's a reference to the Dark Forest. On the other hand, his clan's new nickname among the public is the Azure Pugs. But look, I don't have a minute to spare at the moment. There's been over 17,000 applications to join our clan, despite the blacklist.
What about Evelyn?
Nothing. His warriors respawned. No one messed with them, and they returned peacefully to Cartus, happy and content that they acquired the pirate quest. He already spoke with me and told me that he wouldn't begin it without you. He wants to do it together. The Emperor sent an invitation. Check your mail. Some way or another, we've formed the first ever alliance of two clans from the different empires.
I bet he wants to thank you.
Oh, almost forgot. Eric, Leidy, and Klutzer were summoned to the Emperor yesterday and granted the reward for the first kill achievement. You were a little occupied, so the Emperor promised to meet with you separately. Or so the Herald told me. The kiddos won't tell me what they received, but they're as pleased as a dog with two tails. In general, I have to say that everyone is super satisfied with our battle, and there are constant offers to do it again. We haven't actually captured the castle yet. According to the clan ratings, we're currently in 4,776th place.
Got it. What's our plan?
At the moment, Magdi is running the new players through the dungeons. We're looking to assemble 7 or 8 raiding parties. The laborers and gatherers present a bit of a problem right now, but I think it'll blow over soon enough. In a week, the clans will get tired of hunting us, and we'll be left alone. Only one request. Don't attack again for the time being. It's true that we'd have more recruits, but the clan treasury won't handle another Armageddon. And without the spell, we won't make it.
Oh, sure they'll leave us alone, I grumbled, turning away from the girl and towards the two high-level rogues standing at the edge of the safe zone. They returned my look by running their thumbs across their throats. It was looking like we'd have to use portals to leave Anhurs and stay away from populated areas. But first,
Gira, how are you? This is Mayan.
Yes, I only just respawned and would like to discuss our further cooperation.
You did what?
And? Right up to the inside gate?
How many did you lose?
Excellent. And then what?
Okay, let's meet up then. Send me your coordinates.
Stunned, I looked at my amulet, barely processing what I had just heard. During the big explosion, Gira's squad, which had been at some distance from the battle, managed to infiltrate the castle without losing a single warrior in the process. A day later, they had been repulsed, but the mere fact that Armageddon could clear out Ultimita without damaging any of the buildings made me very happy. I could purchase another scroll, detonate it, and then swoop in and pick up the sweet remains. I'd have to speak with Evelyn. Maybe he had one more of those beauties lying around somewhere.
Chapter 11 The Thracinian Secret.
Mayan, I'm dead certain now that we can't reach the center of the castle directly,
Gira said sadly.
The phantoms managed to stop us even back when they were level 300. Now that they've reached level 380, we can take on one at a time, but an entire group of them. Do you have another Armageddon scroll by any chance?
Unfortunately, no. I shook my head. Evelyn merely laughed when I offered to buy another scroll. By the way, I finally found out why there are so few of these useful scrolls in Barleona. First, the spell must be enchanted on a special sheet of paper that grows once a month from some rare tree. Every self-respecting clan has one of these trees, which typically grows in the middle of their castle, so this doesn't pose that much of a problem. The problems are elsewhere. The scroll must be charged, invested with about 20 million points of mana during one day. This involves the uninterrupted work of several hundred high-level mages. But even this isn't the problem. It's not difficult to find mages who are willing to wave their hands over a scroll for hours on end. No, the chief difficulty is that after preparing the scroll and filling it with mana, you have to go to the High Mage and have him inscribe the spell structure onto the scroll, and then ask either the Emperor or the Dark Lord to have them breathe life into this scroll. Only after this is the scroll ready to use. Considering the hurdles involved in gaining an audience with the mighty of this world, I can safely conclude that an Armageddon scroll represents a truly special kind of pleasure.
In that case, all we can do is die, said Gira unhappily. My duty compels me toward the castle, yet my mind screams to run away. It's unbearable to live with such a split in my consciousness.
Is there really no other way to get into the castle? Launch ourselves in with a catapult or scale the walls?
I don't know about the catapult, but we already scaled the walls. It's a good thing that they're not too tall. I survived the fall. As soon as you reach the parapet, some spell knocks you off and accelerates your plummet to the ground. It's a handy measure against thieves, but in our case, it's also an insurmountable obstacle. There are only two ways into the castle. One is unrealistic, and the other is through the gates, which are constantly disgorging a torrent of level 380 phantoms.
Wait, what do you mean by unrealistic? I latched on to the word. There's another way into Altamita besides through the gates?
You're forgetting that I am the inheritor of Glarnis,
the girl smiled sadly.
The throne room of my castle was built from imperial steel and remains intact to this day. If we wanted to believe in fairy tales, we could enter Altamita through that room. But we need to be realistic. It's much more feasible to break into the castle through the front gates.
Explain? I could barely contain myself, guiding Gira in the necessary direction. Now I understood why the developers had slipped me these mercenaries, so that I could make my way into Altamita through Glarnis. There's no such thing as an impossible quest in Barleona.
A secret passageway from the Glarnis throne room will lead us to a secret area several kilometers from the now dead castle. I was not entrusted with the secrets of this passage, but as I discovered on my own, without a map, it makes for an impossible route. And you should keep in mind that only a member of the ruling dynasty can open the secret door. Me, that is. However, it is safe to conclude from the odd and random phrases that my father would slip about this passage
that this dungeon is filled with dangerous and terrifying monsters that can drain the very soul from a living person. I am not afraid to die for my homeland, as long as I'm exacting vengeance on the phantoms as I do so, but I am terrified of being extinguished forever, to be cast into non-existence for all eternity.
Hang on. Tell me, if I take a squad of free citizens and clear the dungeon of these monsters, will you open the door to the throne room? You understand perfectly well that we respawn from the Greylands, and that it is almost impossible to destroy or drain our souls. My warriors will clear a path to Ultimita, destroying all the monsters in their path, and you can come up behind us and join us before we enter the throne room. What do you think?
It's not all that simple, Shaman,
Gira replied wistfully. And yet I noticed a welcome spark of curiosity flash across her eyes that suggested only one thing. Sooner than later, so long as I kept pressing her, I'd gain a new quest. Oh, how I live for just such moments!
The way to Glarnis from the dungeon entrance is straight as an arrow. There is nothing complicated about it, and I myself have traveled it. Losing 20 warriors in the labyrinth that begins right under the castle, we managed to pass only 2 levels before we encountered a terrible monster that drew forth souls. 20 of my brethren fell, never to stand again in that labyrinth, purchasing with their deaths a chance for us to flee shamefully. Just in case, I will remind you, Ultimita is located on top of Glarnis, and only the owner, that is, you, can access it. What can a level 102 shaman do against level 300 monsters? The answer is simple. Absolutely nothing.
You're correct about that. I was practically dancing from the emotions surging within me. I can't do anything against them. But you're incorrect to assume that there is only one owner of the castle. Anastaria is my spouse and has exactly the same rights as I do.
Will she do as a guide? Anastaria? Isn't she the paladin lieutenant? The blindingly beautiful woman with whom we fought the phantoms side by side that first day that we first met?
The very same, I confirmed. At the moment, she's about to become a paladin captain, which will only make her stronger, so, well, she'll manage. She and I will go together, clear out the dungeon, and then you'll open the passage to the Glarnis throne room. How do you like this idea?
When are you setting out?
Gira asked enthusiastically, instantly seeming eager, as if she hadn't literally a second ago seemed like she was about to go to her death.
I need a day or two to prepare the key for the door. It can't be opened just like that. In another 3 days, my people and I will be ready. The Glarnis throne room will allow us to reach any part of Ultimita.
Not so fast, I restrained the girl. Anastaria returns only in a week. She is undergoing training with Iluna at the moment. Will you be able to survive for a short while without terminating our agreement or rushing to meet your death at the hands of the phantoms?
Now I have a goal,
Gira said, a bit angrily.
So I will manage. A week or two isn't so long to wait when vengeance is on the line.
Okay, then. I've discovered a way of entering Ultimita, so now I need to heed the Patriarch's advice and try to figure out why the barbarians fled. The developers aren't in the business of dispensing useless advice. It's worth listening to them. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel, so I got out my amulet and called my raid leader. Magdy, I will need you and your boys to take care of something for me. There wasn't any point in traveling all the way to the barbarians to discover why they had fled on my own. I didn't know their levels, NPCs, nor their language, if it turned out that they didn't speak the common tongue. And I didn't have the wisdom to understand foreign languages. From the perspective of raids, I'm a weak link that was best gotten rid of as soon as possible. How was I to survive under these circumstances? Ordering Magdy to go discover the reason for the barbarian's flight, I set out to look at Altamita. The players couldn't hurt me, and NPCs required more than a mere order to attack me. They needed some good reason, and being listed in a clan's blacklist wasn't one of them. In effect, I had a unique invulnerability at the moment that I could use to my advantage. The guards will grab me as soon as I approach within 500 meters of the castle, since my Master of the House buff had vanished as soon as my reputation with Narlak hit hatred level, so I could safely assume a cold welcome. And still, I was curious to check out the castle to see what had happened to it in the wake of the battle and my casting of Armageddon.
"Why, you're not simply a bastard! You're also an insolent bastard!"
No sooner had I appeared near Altamita than a squad of players flew up to me, sending several arrows and spells at me, just in case, and making certain that my invulnerability remained as before. The players surrounded me as closely as they could from all sides. If they couldn't attack me, they would content themselves with barring my passage. Silly people. There were only 700 meters from me to the castle, and I could use my dragon form for the full 30 minutes. So I immediately transformed, soared up above them, and headed to look at my castle. The blessed ground of Iluna, which even I could not cross, was located a mere 100 meters from the castle. The guards were yelling something threatening and brandishing their swords from the ground and ordering me to descend, but I had no desire to indulge them. Let them yell. It'd do their lungs some good. What can I say? Even though Armageddon is the most destructive spell in all of Barleona, it had only caused 5% damage to my castle's walls and gates. I unconsciously began to reckon up how much money I would need to invest into an ordinary castle to upgrade it to this level. It's terrifying to even imagine the amount. Even the price of my release would seem insignificant in comparison to it.
"May I inquire what you're doing here, Daniel?"
Eckler asked, surprised. It was inconvenient to speak while maintaining myself in the air, yet I made an effort and got out my amulet and answer it without losing altitude in the process. "Just seeing how much damage I did to my castle by casting Armageddon the other day. It's looking like it's not so bad, so I suppose you can expect me in short order."
"You don't have another scroll. It's not nice of you to play tricks on an older person."
Suddenly I discerned satisfaction, happiness, in Stacy's father's voice. It seemed like Eckler had expected me to say something like this.
"And yet, I can sell you one myself, at the price it cost me to make it. 10 million, and the scroll is yours. Or do you want 2 at once? I bet you won't have enough money for 2, though."
"Well, you've had your laugh," I replied seriously, understanding perfectly well that Eckler had just had his way with me. It takes some talent to put a player in his place like this, and the old man had plenty of this talent. "Listen, since we're at an impasse anyway, maybe we can make an alliance. clear out the phantoms, and help me take my castle?
No, man, this isn't my fight. My clan is a mere pawn here. I was offered a very nice reward to keep you from reaching the castle, and I can even let you in on some info. I can't let you through for another couple weeks. 3 weeks and 2 days, to be precise. That's all I can say. I'm already playing with fire as it is. Good luck to you, and stay away from Altamira. Over and out.
3 weeks and 2 days? What a weird amount of time. I didn't risk flying up to the blessed land. Instead, I made a ceremonial pass around Altamira, flew away from the conflict zone, and used one of my last teleport scrolls. Hello again, Anhurs.
You have acquired the shards, asserted the Thracinian when I placed the fragments of the sculpture on the table before him. Our people are grateful for your achievement.
I instantly got a notification telling me that my reputation with the Thracinians had increased by 300. The blue-skinned Danrai made to gather up the shards, but I restrained him. Please forgive me, I said, but I believe that these fragments may be reassembled into a fairly beautiful figure. Will you assemble them yourself?
Unfortunately, the Danrai's face instantly became downcast. That is not in our power. There are no master craftsmen remaining among the Danrai who would be able to unite the fragments, as you called them, into the whole. A free citizen on his own is likewise incapable of recreating the original item. To do so, a unity is required, and yet there have been prior attempts under the oversight of the Emperor himself that did not achieve the necessary result. 3 times the free citizens tried to assemble the shards, and 3 times they dissolved to dust, depriving us of a piece of our history for centuries.
A unity? I asked, even as I popped open the relevant manual. Right, there really is something like that. Uh-huh.
Oh, come on!
A unity is a craftsman ability that a player unlocks automatically upon reaching level 200 in his profession. The idea behind this truly singular ability was astonishing. The player's consciousness would unite and thereby combine and pool each other's crafting resources. A unity could be created only through the Sphere of Abnegation, a personal item of the Emperor. Players who wanted to experiment with it had to petition for an audience, wait their turn, and then get their chance to create true masterpieces. Statues, weapons, armor. The manual went on to provide images of the unity's works with various unbelievable properties, but I got the main idea. Under no condition should I give this guy the sculpture's fragments right now. Even if I still had a long way to go to reach level 200 in jewel crafting, still. By the way, who said that a unity requires profession level 200 anyway? The manual? As if. Terribly sorry. I immediately replaced the shards in my bag and away from the Danrai's eager paws. Another notification concerning a change in reputation, this time in the other direction, less 300, but I knew what I was doing. I needed a sculptor, preferably 2. Barsa, what's up? I called the girl as soon as I left the Thracinians. Do you happen to know who the highest-level craftsman in Malabar is?
That'd be Svard, my deputy replied without a moment's hesitation. He's not in a clan, and his enchantment stat is definitely above level 400. He's even in the Hall of Fame.
Enchantment is good.
But I didn't make myself clear. I need either an architect or a sculptor.
A sculptor? Chirona from Phoenix. She's one of the few players who was allowed to work on the Imperial Palace.
Chirona. Thanks, I'll remember that. By the way, how is it you know so much about craftsmen? I thought that your line of work had more to do with warriors.
When the mass exodus started, I had to find new ones. These two I mentioned represent the peak of their profession, so I read up about them. But my turn to ask, what do you need them for? Are you plotting something again?
More or less, I smirked. All right, I'll go see if she wants to work with us.
Don't forget, Phoenix is our enemy, the girl reminded me before hanging up.
You don't say, I said into the already disconnected amulet, and instantly dialed Echeler. Let's see exactly what kind of enemies we were.
Speaking.
Echeler, this is Mayan again. I need Chirona, your sculptor. I'm trying to recreate the Thracinian sculpture.
It won't work, my father-in-law replied, as though our clans hadn't just fought a battle. Chirona and several sculptors formed a unity and tried to assemble it, but to no avail.
That's exactly why I need her. She's worked in a unity before. As for things not working out...
Okay, let's assume you know something. Let's assume that I ask her to help you. Let's even assume that you somehow get your hands on the sphere of abnegation. Still, you expect me to believe that you've reached level 200 in your profession, your work on the chess set notwithstanding.
Heckler, I won't promise you the world and claim that everything will work out for me, but I want to try very much. If it doesn't work out, you can call me a failure. But if I'm right, I'll be able to assemble the sculpture.
Have you forgotten that we're at war at the moment?
Judging by his voice, the man was grinning. How could I forget? I've got an invulnerability counter blinking right before my eyes.
Do you need anyone else aside from Chirona?
As I understood it, the highest-level craftsman in our empire is Svard. He's the one I want to work with. Of course, he might not have a sculptor. Anyway, we'll figure it out.
You want to form a unity with you three?
Uh-huh.
Chirona will mail you and send you her amulet. One condition. You don't poach her from me. No job offers. I request that the heralds attest my demand.
That works. I request that the heralds attest my agreement to Achiller's demand. By the way, you wouldn't know where I could find Svard, do you? A notification confirming our agreement instantly flashed before me, but I swiped it away.
When he's in the game, you can find him in his workshop in Anhurs. Ask the guards where you can find Master Svard. They'll tell you. Good luck in your creative endeavors.
What a war we have on our hands. It is unique and merciless. Well, I wonder what is supposed to happen in 2 weeks and 2 days.
How may I assist you, O Doom of Clans?
Said Svard, when he understood that I had come to the workshop. The craftsman's voice was so hoarse and quiet that I had the impression as if he had eaten several quarts of ice cream in the frost, caught a cold, and then screamed for as long as he could. He was practically wheezing out the words. A very strange phenomenon for the typically perfect Barleona avatar. Svard turned out to be a fairly extravagant level 183 mage.
The extravagance of the blue-eyed and disheveled player without a clan symbol consisted of his utter ignorance of any logic to his dress. His steel cuirass was decorated with yellow flowers. His cloth trousers abutted leather boots of an acidic hue. A belt with steel buckles, a leather pauldron, and a red hat that recalled Santa Claus. The fellow had reached level 183 without ever discovering that one's clothes should be of one type in order to attain the most possible use out of it. The player sitting before me clearly couldn't care less about his outward appearance, since clearly he himself felt very well. "I need help," I replied simply, glancing around the workshop. "If you were to remove the various particulars—vials, mortars with powder, paintbrushes, and paints—the enchanter's workshop would remain no different from the jeweler's workshop."
"Enchantments don't work on the Thracinians,"
the mage replied, scrutinizing my clothes.
"Unless you have a special mark that indicates that the item may be integrated with others. But, as I can see, you're wearing the standard gear, even though one needs higher reputation to buy it."
"Standard?" I immediately latched on. "Are you saying that there are non-standard scaling items out there?"
"Of course. You're wearing several items from the Emperor and several from the Thracinians. I know all about items awarded for a victory in the arena and for the first kill. The latter are the ones that have the integrated attribute. But you didn't come here for that."
"True. I want to make a unity. Are you interested?"
"Have you reached level 200 in your profession?"
"No."
"Then I am interested," Svard replied. "I've heard that you've been working on the Commandant chess set, so I am willing to try to form a unity. I'll say right off that my crafting level is only at 9, and that's with the bonuses I gain from items, so I wouldn't count on me too much. By the way, are you aware that during a unity, everyone's design mode becomes visible to everyone else, along with all its contents?"
"It happens." I shrugged my shoulders ambiguously, mentally placing a large plus beside Svard's name. 9 levels of crafting. That's a priceless addition to the labor pool. Why hasn't Phoenix or some other clan snatched him up yet? I'd have to find out.
"When did you unlock your design mode?"
"Sorry? I don't understand."
"You have unlocked design mode, correct?"
"Yes. No point denying the obvious."
"You opened it like any other ordinary craftsman before level 150 when a player receives a quest. Don't look at me like I'm the enemy of the people. Want me to tell you what your design mode looks like? You're a shaman, aren't you? Hold on a minute. I'll be right back."
The mage's eyes glassed over, indicating that he had temporarily left the game. More accurately, not the game, but rather full immersion in it.
"And so,"
Svard returned to Barleona literally several minutes later,
"your design mode has an utterly black shell. I don't know how the sectors containing the crafted items are arranged in it, but most likely they're sorted by unique, rare, and common items. The player's images stand apart, if you've ever made any. But who am I kidding? Of course you have. Who can forget the cursed chess set? By the way, are chess sets your specialty?"
"How?" I managed to utter, not understanding how this person had just managed to describe my unique design mode, which, as it turned out, wasn't so unique after all.
"You haven't figured it out on your own yet? I signed out to reality, especially to look up the shaman design mode. Remember what your screen looks like when you work with spirits? It doesn't remind you of anything?"
"That's it. Remove everything unnecessary from spirit summoning mode, and add some shelves, and you'll have your design mode. It follows that any player can open it at any time, regardless of level. All he needs is the desire and confidence in his own abilities."
"So, you too?" I echoed, surprised. "Of course. At level 20, as soon as I began to study enchantment, I donned a breastplate with +5 to all stats, and entered design mode for my first crafting session. It was only later on, when I hired Phoenix to help me complete the quest, that I received formal access to design mode. Prior to that, I worked just as you do. Only mages have a silver mode shell instead of a black one. As I understand it, we're not going to go to the Emperor?"
"Nah, we'll work on location. You're not against using your workshop?"
"With one condition. If you demolish it like you did the jewel crafting one, you cover the damages."
"You know about that, too?"
"You bet. As the owner of a workshop, I am required to attend the meetings of the Craftsman Guild. The jewel crafting master made sure to brag about how his apprentice caused the yin-yang to bloom, right in his workshop. Should I name that pupil, or will you remember it yourself?"
"Bragged?"
"Of course. The yin-yang hasn't flowered in a long time, and no player has ever accomplished this before. I made sure to look that up. So, his workshop has been fully restored, and now the gnome simply can't wait to see his favorite apprentice again."
"Huh. And here I was, afraid of showing up there again."
"Let's try and form a unity. If it doesn't work, I recommend you head over there."
"No, we need another person." Seeing a new mail notification, I opened my mailbox and began looking for a message from Chirona. Invitation to a clan, invitation to a clan, request to be introduced to Anastaria, the results of the Miss Malabar contest.
What? "Attention, attention, attention. The lovely Raniada has been declared winner of the 16th annual Miss Malabar Beauty Contest. We congratulate the winner and wish her all the best in this world. The award ceremony will take place in the Imperial Palace in 4 days, 12 hours, 23 minutes, 12 seconds. 11 seconds. 10 seconds.
"Miss Malabar?" I blurted out.
"You just found out that your wife is no longer the prettiest woman on our continent?"
Svard interjected.
"Everyone was quite surprised when Anastaria refused to participate. She hadn't had any competition for the past 3 years. And now we have Raniada."
I finally found the letter from Chirona containing her amulet, so, not wishing to put anything off, I invited her right to Svard's workshop. If we were going to try this, might as well do it now.
But why did Stacy decline the chance to receive the 4th prize for prettiest woman? And who was this Raniada?
"I am starting to get an idea of what you're planning on here," said Svard as soon as Chirona entered the workshop.
Nodding to her, he greeted her warmly.
It's good to see you, Chirona. How's the work on the palace going?
Guys, let's get right down to business. I cut off the two masters' conversation at its root and placed the Thracinian shards on the table. Judging by the eager spark in Svard's eyes, this was exactly what he had expected. I brought us together with a single goal. I need to reassemble this sculpture. Chirona, as I understood it, has already tried to do this before, but with no success. I propose we try again, as a unity.
First of all, Svard spoke up, as I already told you, a unity requires special conditions, but as I understand it, you've come up with some way of circumventing them. Second of all, I don't have sculptor, so what am I going to do?
Practice shows that many sculptors aren't always a good thing. I think that instead of a unity of several sculptors, we need a sculptor and some other craftsmen. So why not an enchanter and a jeweler? I can't explain why. I suggest we just try it. As for special conditions, I have one idea, but I would need your official permission to take partial control of your avatars, without any blocking, so that we can unite our minds.
What is this nonsense? Chirona exclaimed. It's not possible to form a unity without the sphere.
Our colleague's words contain a grain of truth, agreed Svard. This is not possible, but I am still interested. I grant you my official permission, with